Chapter 6. Millie was exhausted. Once she reached the chamber she was to use, she lay down on the bed to rest her eyes. It was a cozy room, having been made that way by her mother many years before. The tapestry on the wall and the comfortable bed made it seem like home, and before she knew it, Millie was asleep. She missed supper and would have slept until morning, but halfway through the night her door flew open and a flock of bats fluttered in. Millie sat up, rubbing her eyes, as one of the bats settled on her bed and turned into Zoe.
"Guess what?" said her friend. "My parents have to go, but they said I can stay here with you."
Another bat landed on the floor, and a moment later, Garrett was shutting the door. He had the same blonde hair as Zoe, and the same sharply defined features, but unlike his daughter, the prince was tall and extraordinarily handsome, while Zoe could only be considered pretty.
"Lil said that she can manage without Zoe as long as the boys remain bats," said Garrett. "So I spoke to your mother and father, and they said it's fine with them. I'm sorry we're going to miss your party, but at least you two will be together."
"Zoe," said Lil, a small brown bat, "you can fly us to the castle wall, then I want you to go to bed. You and Millie are going to have a busy day tomorrow, so you should get some sleep now."
"But, Mama, I slept all the way here," wailed Zoe.
"I'm sorry, Zoe, but you'll have to live like a human, at least for a little while. Queen Frizella and King Bottoman don't know anything about you, so just let them think you're human while you're staying with them."
Lil fluttered around Millie, brushing the girl's cheek with her wing.
"Happy birthday, Millie," Lil said. "Behave yourselves and don't get into any trouble."
"See you in the morning," Zoe told her friend before turning back into a bat and flying out the window with her family. It seemed as though Millie had just fallen asleep again when she woke to the sound of people running in the halls and the tinkling laughter that could only belong to a fairy. She sat up and was about to get out of bed when suddenly her door burst open and a flood of full-sized fairies poured in as a flock of tiny fairies flew in through the window. Laughing and shouting, "Happy birthday!" the fairies crowded around Millie's bed, showering her with kisses so delicate that she could scarcely feel them. Tiny fairies began to jump on her bed, shedding fairy dust in their excitement. They didn't seem to mind when a larger fairy swept a dozen or so of them aside so she could sit by Millie's feet.
"Happy birthday!" she said, giving Millie's toes a pat.
It was the swamp fairy. She had become a particular friend of Millie's parents around the time Millie was born, claiming that she had a special tie to them because she had known them for so long. Millie felt a tug on her hair. The tiny fairies were swarming around her head, vying with each other to arrange her locks in a special birthday style. Not to be outdone, the big fairies began rooting through Millie's trunks, pulling out one gown after another, then discarding them, declaring that they were too plain or too ugly. Her shoes were also dismissed as being unsightly and tossed under the bed. When the tiny fairies finally let go of her hair and hovered around her to admire their handiwork, Millie reached up to feel what they had done. Somehow, they had turned her hair into a giant knot that she couldn't get her fingers through. Millie winced when her fingers snagged the knot.
Thanks for trying, but
no, it's my turn, said the swamp fairy.
With a wave of her hand, the knots came out of Millie's hair with a whoosh and flew in a whirl around her head, settling in an intricate arrangement of curls. A mirror flew out of the trunk on the floor, stopping inches away from Millie's face. She had to lean back to see her hair, which wobbled and bounced each time she moved her head.
Very nice, but
let me, cried another fairy.
No, me, cried another.
Millie gritted her teeth and tried to look like she was enjoying it as the bigger fairies used their magic to rearrange her hair. Curls, loops, ringlets, braids, poofs, and buns all gave way as her hair changed from one style to the next. From what she could see in the mirror, none of the styles were anything she would have actually worn, although a few gave her some ideas.
Hello,
called an overly cheerful voice, and Queen Frizella stuck her head into the room.
"What's going on in here?"
she asked, smiling broadly. The swamp fairy frowned.
"We were just leaving," she said. "Happy birthday again, sweet bud," she said to Millie, and gave her another kiss on the cheek.
Then, in a sparkle of fairy dust and a tinkling sound like wind chimes, fairies big and small fled the room. Queen Frizella scowled at Millie.
They didn't have to leave, she said, and turned to study the mess on the floor. I hope you brought a maid to clean this up. Still scowling, she stomped from the room and closed the door with a loud thunk. Millie sighed and slid out from under her covers. Although she could do some simple magic of the ordinary kind, most of her magic was related to being a dragon. This meant that while her relatives could clean a room with a quick and easy spell, Millie had to ask a maid to do it or do it herself. It didn't take long to pick up all her gowns, but her shoes were under the bed and she had to crawl on her stomach to reach them. She was still trying to grab the last slipper when the door opened again and Zoe and Francis came in. "Looks like your party already started," said Francis.
"The fairies came to see me,"
Millie said, crawling out from under the bed.
"Is that what happened to your hair?"
asked Zoe, stifling a giggle. Millie reached up to touch her hair.
"Is it that bad? I haven't found the mirror yet."
"It's not that bad," said Zoe, grinning.
"It's worse. Here, let me help you." The last fairy to arrange Millie's hair had left it in stiff coils that sprung from her head like tiny snakes. Taking a boar bristle brush from the trunk, Zoe brushed out her friend's hair and braided it in one long plait.
There, now you can go out in public without frightening everyone.
Am I the only one who's hungry around here? Francis asked.
I'm famished, said Millie, heading toward the door.
You would be, said Zoe as she followed her friends. You slept through dinner last night. Your mother told us not to wake you.
Millie laughed.
Which your whole family did anyway.
That was different, said Zoe. They came to say goodbye.
Your parents left? Asked Francis.
Let's go get some breakfast, said Millie. We'll tell you about it on the way.
Millie and Zoe took turns telling him what had happened. They were still talking when they reached the entrance to the Great Hall and ran into the witches Ratinky and Chlorine, two of the more frequent visitors to Emma and Edric's castle. Although they always wore ordinary clothes when they visited Greater Greensward, today Ratinky and Chlorine were dressed alike in dark green gowns and short, sleeveless, gold-colored tabards embroidered with King Bottoman's double mountain crest. Their clothes were the same, but Chlorine was smiling as if she was happy to see them, while Ratinky's wrinkled face looked sour and grumpy.
"Look, it's Millie!"
Chlorine shouted in her loud and distinctive voice.
"I suppose this means I should say happy birthday or some such drivel," grumbled Ratinky. "No one wishes me well on my birthday, so I don't know why I should say it to anyone else."
"I gave you a new pair of shoes for your birthday not 6 months ago,"
Chlorine bellowed, looking puzzled.
"Goody, shoes,"
grumbled Ratinky.
"But you asked for them. I thought you liked the shoes. You have them on your feet right now."
"You didn't give me what I really wanted. I asked for you to stop shouting, but that hasn't happened yet."
"Why, that's,"
sputtered Chlorine.
"It's good to see you both," said Millie.
"What are those for?" Francis asked, pointing at their golden tabards.
"King Bottoman gave us jobs. We're his magic brigade," Chlorine said proudly in a quieter voice that was still louder than everyone else's. "We work with the army to make stronger armor and weapons that don't break so easily. The king gave us space in the dungeon to do our work and another room to sleep in. It's small, but not nearly as drafty as my cave."
"And no one's come to burn it down the way they did my hut," said Ratinky. "I wonder if it's still repairing itself. I should go and see one of these days. Maybe I should let the cat out, too."
"How long have you been here?" asked Francis.
2 years, said Chlorine. "I didn't know you had a cat, Ratinky."
"That's because it's none of your business," said the old witch. "The cat's probably run out of food by now," she mumbled to herself.
"Maybe one of the villagers let it out," said Millie.
Ratinky curled her lip in a half snarl.
"Maybe one of the villagers stole it. They always were stealing my food."
"Speaking of food," said Francis, "we're on our way to get breakfast. Would you like to join us?"
"No, thanks," said Chlorine. 3 bowls of porridge is enough to start my day."
"I have work to do," Ratinky grumbled. "I want to see if I can find a way to make the opposing army's spears shatter before they reach our men. Maybe when the spears are in the air."
Chlorine nodded.
"We could do that. Or maybe before the soldiers throw them."
Sometimes you come up with good ideas for a ninny head,
Rytinki told her as the two turned and started for the dungeon. When Millie and her friends finally entered the great hall, housemaids and grooms were sweeping the floor and hanging garlands from the windowsills. The tables had already been rearranged for the party, with room for musicians on the raised dais where the king and queen usually sat. The only people sitting down were Maybelle and her brother Eduardo, who smiled and stood up when Millie entered the room.
"Won't you join us?" Eduardo said, indicating the bench beside him.
Millie was happy to share a bench with such a handsome young man. She decided that all she had to do was steer the conversation away from anything that might make her mad and see how well they got along when she didn't have to worry about side effects or her fear that she could change into a dragon.
"Where are all the fairies?" asked Zoe as she took a seat across from Millie.
"They went off with some woman named Grisina," said Maybelle. "She said they could help her with the flowers for the party."
"Grisina is my mother," said Francis.
"That's nice," Maybelle said, looking bored.
Eduardo turned so that he was facing Millie, even though she was sitting right next to him. Francis scowled, but didn't say anything until after the cook's helper had set a bowl of porridge in front of each of them and returned to the kitchen. "How long are you staying in Upper Monte Vista, Eduardo?" asked Francis. Eduardo looked annoyed as he said,
"Are you talking to me? What was your name again? You have a better memory than I do, Maybelle. What is the boy called?"
"Francis," Maybelle said, giggling.
"It's Lord Francis to you, Ed," said Francis.
"That's right. Grisina is the younger sister of Greater Greensward's queen, which makes you Millie's first cousin once removed, doesn't it? As the son of the younger daughter, there isn't much chance you'll ever sit on the throne."
Maybelle clapped her hands and squealed,
"Five gold pieces says my brother is right."
Zoe gasped,
"You're both very rude." Eduardo turned to face her, his lip curled in a sneer.
"You're supposed to be a princess, aren't you?"
"My father is Prince Garrett," said Zoe.
"I noticed that no one has mentioned your kingdom. Is it because you don't really have one?"
"Why, I can't believe..."
It was obvious that Zoe was flustered. Although her father was a prince, his subjects were scattered across countless geographic kingdoms. Zoe didn't dare mention that he was the Prince of Vampires.
"I bet we can uncover the truth before the day is over," said Maybelle.
"My sister likes to wager," said Eduardo.
Maybelle sniffed.
"No more than you."
"Perhaps," said her brother, "but I gamble only about things that really matter. And you," he continued, turning to Zoe, "should work on your lies. You aren't very convincing."
Millie no longer found the young man charming.
"I can't believe you're calling my friend a liar," she said,
sliding away from him on the bench.
"Because if you are, you're calling me one too. I told you who she was last night."
"Ah, but that was a joke, wasn't it?" said Eduardo.
"No more than you are a gentleman," Millie replied.
Francis had two spots of red on his cheeks as he said,
"You've insulted my cousin and our friend. You, sir, have no honor. Would you care to meet me on the jousting field so I can teach you a lesson?"
Eduardo laughed.
"I don't joust with children."
"You can't be more than a year or two older than I," said Francis. "I could best you at any weapon you choose."
"Don't flatter yourself, boy," said Eduardo. "You may be related to royalty, but you'll never be my equal."
"Why, I oughta," Francis began, just as a witch seated on the handle of a pitchfork zipped into the hall, shouting, "There's the birthday girl!" Suddenly, there were witches everywhere, pushing and shoving as they streamed through the windows and doors. Millie stood to watch the witches arrive. Although some of them rode brooms, others rode farm implements, chairs, and magic carpets. One witch even rode a cobbler's bench, which trotted to the corner to wait until its rider was ready to leave.
"Oh, my,"
said Maybelle as the witches crowded around, laughing and jostling each other as they tried to get close to Millie. Smiling until she felt as if her face might crack, Millie returned their hugs and greeted each one by name. Francis and Zoe joined Millie in greeting the witches they knew, while Maybelle and Eduardo shrank away from the witches as if afraid of touching one. It was some time before the friends had said hello to everyone crowding around them, but once they had, three witches who'd been waiting in the back stepped forward. Dyspepsia and her sister Oculura lived in the enchanted forest near Zoe's family. Millie had never seen the third witch before.
"My sister and I have someone here we'd like you to meet," said Dyspepsia. "This is Madine. Our cottage used to belong to her."
Zoe gasped and clutched Frances's arm, while Millie's smile vanished. Madine was the name of the witch who had caught Lil and kept her tied with string to a rafter in an old run-down cottage. Lil had been unable to leave the cottage even after Madine had gone. It had been Emma who had freed the little bat. The old witch stepped forward and looked at them with eyes as piercing as a blue jay's.
"Where can I find the little witch called Emeralda? She took something of mine."
"I'm her daughter," Millie said, squaring her shoulders and raising her chin. "Maybe I can help you."
"Not unless you can tell me where I can find my bat. I've heard rumors that your mother stole it. Well, I've come back and I want my bat," Madine said, waving a string in the air. "She was the best bat I've ever owned."
Zoe's already pale skin grew whiter. Her voice was shaking as she said,
"You can't have her back. She has a life and a family now."
"She had a life with me," said Madine.
"She was your prisoner," cried Zoe. "You can't call that a life."
Madine narrowed her eyes and peered at Zoe.
"Why do you care so much about a bat?"
"Because she's my mother,"
Zoe said, holding her head higher when she heard Maybelle's gasp behind her.
"Well, I'll be," cackled Madine. "Don't that just beat all?"
"I'm sorry," Dyspepsia whispered to Millie. "We didn't know she'd act like this."
Oculura frowned and reached up to her face, taking out one eye and sticking another in its place. She glanced from Millie to Zoe to Frances, then sighed and said,
"Drat, I was hoping I was seeing all these long faces 'cause I'd put in the wrong eye again. You're supposed to be smiling. We came here for a party, didn't we? Let's get this shindig started."
Suddenly, the room was a whirl of activity. The air was so rich with magic that it sparkled as witches sent their brooms to sweep the last of the dust from the floor, put up the rest of the garlands with a gesture, and carried the food from the kitchen on a mouth-watering breeze. And then the fairies were there, strewing flowers on the tables and floors, passing out nosegays, and filling the air with laughter. Grisina had followed the fairies into the room, and soon the rest of Millie's relatives appeared in the doorway. Watching Maybelle and Eduardo run off to join Bradston, Zoe said,
"I need some fresh air. If I don't go out now, I'm going to bite one of those idiots, and that would only make matters worse."
"I'll go with her to make sure she's all right," said Frances. "You stay with your guests, Millie. It's your party, and you should be here." Millie was still watching Zoe and Frances work their way through the crowd when Grisina approached her.
"I'm sorry your party won't be quite the way you'd planned, but I hope you enjoy it. This is your special day, after all." "Thank you, Aunt Grisina. I just..."
"Grisina, you haven't changed at all since the last time I saw you," said Madine, jostling Millie aside. "Except you do have a few gray hairs and some wrinkles next to your eyes, and..."
"Have we met?" Grisina asked the old witch.
"It's me, Madine. Don't tell me your memory is going too."
"Madine, it's been a long time."
"Sure has. So, I heard that you're no longer the Green Witch. Did you lose your magic or what?"
Grisina sighed.
"It's a long story, but no, I still have my magic."
She glanced at Millie, saying,
"Madine and I knew each other years ago. She was one of the smartest witches I'd ever met and knew more about magic than any other 10 witches put together. I'm curious, though, Madine. We thought you were dead. What happened to you?"
"Dead? Ha!" said the old witch. "Though I was at death's door for years, I spent my money on one healer after another, but they were all a bunch of fakes. Then I heard about the witch doctor Ting Tang. I went to see him, and he cured me. See? Good as new," she said, thumping her chest with her fist. "He was a smart one, all right. Not like the addle-pated fools I saw before him. I'd recommend old Ting Tang to anyone. He can cure just about any affliction. Say, is that girl really Lil Stinker's daughter?"
"She met Zoe," Millie told her aunt.
Grisina nodded.
"Lil married a prince. They have 3 boys and 2 girls. Zoe is the eldest."
What a shame, said Mudine. Lil was the best bat I ever knew. I was counting on her to live with me again. That husband of hers must be something special. What is he, a shapeshifter or a vampire?
Actually, Grisina began.
Time for presents, shouted the swamp fairy. Come over here, Millie, and see what we brought you.
Millie smiled apologetically at Mudine and Grisina before crossing the hall to the raised platform where the musicians were to perform. The fairies had taken it over, covering the floor with rose petals and decorating a chair with rosebuds. As she passed her family, Millie heard her grandmother, Queen Frizella, muttering under her breath,
Nothing is ready yet. The party wasn't supposed to start for hours.
You have to expect this kind of thing when you invite witches and fairies, Mother, said Edric. Millie caught the angry look her father was giving his mother, which made her wonder just what was going on. And then Millie was at the platform and the fairies were showing her their gifts. They gave her gowns, a few made of fabric, but most made of materials like spider's silk or moth wings. She received a cape made of violet petals and one made of mouse fur. Three flower fairies gave her two pairs of glass slippers for summer and one pair of heavy glass boots for winter. The pumpkin fairy gave her a bag of seeds, each one guaranteed to grow into a full-sized carriage good for one evening's ride. It was the swamp fairy who gave her the mice in the wicker cage and the directions for how to turn them into coachmen. Then it was the witch's turn. Oculura and Dyspepsia gave her a crow that could speak 17 languages and say the alphabet backward in each. Chlorine gave her a magic mirror that would reveal whether a young man she liked was actually her true love. Ratinki gave her a covered basket filled with miniature witches' lights in all the colors of the rainbow. Other witches gave her ingredients to use in potions, fly feet, chicken ears, the eyes of blind cavefish, and the sweat of a left-handed man collected on the second Tuesday of a month starting with the letter J. When her family approached carrying their gifts, Millie already had so many presents that she didn't know what to do with them all. Queen Chartreuse and King Limelin gave her a new crown decorated with emeralds. Grisina and Haywood brought her books on plants and magic. Millie sighed when her parents gave her a collection of potions, lotions, and perfumes meant to soothe, calm, and relieve tension or bad moods. Of course, they would give her a practical gift. Then Zoe handed her a necklace of blood-red stones from her family, and Francis gave her a pouch filled with coins from the magic marketplace that could be spent only at the magic marketplace.
They're worth twice their face value on certain days, whispered Francis. What days are those? Asked Millie.
Francis shrugged.
They don't tell you that.
And then Queen Frizella and King Bodiman were there saying,
Our special gift for you is in the courtyard. Come along and see what it is.
Millie tried to find her parents in the crowd, thinking they would like to see the present too, since it was part of the reason they had traveled so far. They were busy listening to a new arrival, however, a witch who was waving her arms as she talked. At Frizella's urging, Millie left her parents where they were and accompanied her grandmother to the door leading to the courtyard. Until now, she'd forgotten all about her grandparents' promise and wondered what they could possibly give her that would be special, especially since she usually got magical presents and... Millie stopped dead at the top of the stairs. The special present was right there in the courtyard with a big pink bow on its neck. It was a small white pony. The very last thing Millie wanted.
Don't you love it?
Asked her grandmother, breathing into her ear.
Millie didn't know what to say. She thought horses were beautiful, but they hated her.
If she went near the pony, it would behave like every other horse did when she got too close. It would rear and kick and try to run off, and she'd have to pretend not to know why it acted that way.
It's very nice, Millie said.
Crossing her fingers inside the long sleeve of her gown, she added,
But I already have dozens of horses at home.
It was a lie. Her parents had horses, but Millie couldn't even go into the stable.
Really?
Her grandmother said, a smile frozen on her face. Millie couldn't approach the pony without attracting the kind of attention she wanted to avoid. Even so, she felt awful as she turned and walked back into the great hall. She just hoped she hadn't hurt her grandmother's feelings. Francis and Zoe had followed her to the courtyard, and they hurried to catch up now.
That was some special gift, said Francis.
I heard your grandparents talking while you were opening your presents from the fairies. They hadn't even decided what to give you. I was there when a page suggested a pony, and they sent him to the stable to pick one out. Millie could feel the heat creeping up her neck. Her grandmother had insisted that Millie come to get a special gift, yet she hadn't even had a gift in mind. Worse, the pony was the most unsuitable gift anyone could have given her. Calm down, Millie thought. Grandmother had no way of knowing. Remembering her conversation with her parents, Millie took deep breaths until her heart rate returned to normal and her face was no longer hot. I'm not going to get upset, she told her friends. I'm sure my grandmother meant well. The three friends had just walked into the great hall when they heard a commotion in the far corner. The witch who had been talking to her parents now had a wider audience as the other witches crowded around her.
There were a dozen of them, said the old witch Millie knew was named Bertha. They were crawling over the river walls and attacking the people in the town. I never heard such screaming in all my born days.
Emma and Edric looked worried when they found Millie in the crowd. Taking her aside, her mother kissed her on the cheek and said,
I'm sorry, darling, but this is an emergency. Your father and I have to go. The sea monsters are swarming at Chancewold. We've been dealing with them for years, but there have never been this many at one time before.
But it's my birthday party, said Millie.
It can't be helped, said her father. We have to go. Those people are counting on us. Millie could feel the pressure building behind her eyes and in her chest, but she was determined not to lose her temper.
It's all right, she told herself. They were here for most of the party. At least the rest of my family will be with me.
Haywood and I are going too, said Grisina. Some of those monsters sound familiar. I feel responsible for this.
If they are the monsters you created, Aunt Grisina, said Emma, then it's my fault they're there. I banished them from the moat without thinking about where they would go.
She gave her daughter a hug.
Happy birthday, darling. Remember what we talked about in the carriage?
I'll remember, Millie said through gritted teeth.
No one else seemed to notice when her parents and great-aunt and great-uncle left, because by then everyone was eating. Millie was wandering among her guests, thanking them for their gifts, when she came across Frizella and Maybelle. She would have continued on if she hadn't heard Maybelle say,
When you told me last week that you could get the fairies to come to a party, I must admit that I didn't think it was possible. Nobody can get more than three fairies at a social event anymore. Here are the coins I owe you. I was sure this was a bet I couldn't lose.
I told you that the fairies and I are great friends, said Frizella, taking the coins.
Millie frowned. If this was all about a bet. She stepped in front of the two women and turned to face her grandmother.
When did you invite the fairies?
Last week, said Frizella.
Before you invited us, said Millie.
How did you know we would be here? I was supposed to have my party at home.
Queen Frizella shrugged.
I knew your parents would come once I told them that the fairies were expecting you to be here for a birthday party. If you didn't come, the fairies would have been angry, and everyone knows you don't want to make fairies mad.
But you would have made them mad if we hadn't come, said Millie.
Frizella sniffed.
I knew your parents would never let that happen.
Millie could feel her face growing warm, but this time she couldn't have stopped it if she'd wanted to.
You mean you tricked us into coming? You insisted that we have my party here because you wanted the fairies to come, and you knew they always came to my parties?
Maybelle laughed and said,
Whatever works.
Don't act so indignant, Queen Frizella snapped at Millie. It's about time you came to see me.
Millie didn't want to lose her temper, but learning that her grandmother had manipulated her family to win a bet made her angrier than she'd been in a long time. Even then, she might have been able to stop the change if she hadn't seen the smug expression on Maybelle's face and the unrepentant look on her grandmother's. This time, Millie's whole body grew hot as her heart rate went up and her skin began to prickle. Her eyesight grew sharper, too, until she could see a hair quivering on Queen Frizella's chin and flakes of powder on Maybelle's nose. Even in the throes of the change, Millie had enough sense to turn on her heel and start for the door.
Don't you walk away from me again, young lady, shrilled her grandmother.
And then the change happened between one heartbeat and the next, and a dragon stood where the human girl had been. The last thing Millie heard before she flew through a window was the sound of her grandmother screaming.